On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
We've got a really special book to talk about today, Immortal Valor, the Black Medal of Honor winners of World War II, denied recognition for 50 years. It's from Osprey Books, and it was written by Robert Child. Robert is the military history writer and director. He co-authored the book The Lost 11 with Denise George and has published 9 other nonfiction military history titles and military thrillers over the last 8 years, garnering more than 26 writing and directing awards, including an Emmy nomination. He hosts the weekly military history podcast Point of the Spear, which is available on all major platforms. And once again, his new book is Immortal Valor. Rob, thank you so much for joining us today on the Bookshelf.
Well, thanks for having me, Dave. Appreciate it.
So we have 7 amazing men who were fighting for an army that wasn't really all that thrilled to have them there. And they were there to fight for their fellow combatants, for their brothers in arms, but also to show America that they were wrong in underestimating African-American soldiers. None of these guys received the recognition that was their due during World War II, correct?
That's correct. None of them received the Medal of Honor during World War II. Other medals were awarded, but not the highest award.
Right. And some of these guys did not make it through the battle. I'm looking at 3 of them were killed in action. One of them died rescuing drowning servicemen, and the others survived the war. But I believe, is there only one of the 7 is still alive? Is that correct?
That was Vernon Baker, and he was alive to receive the Medal of Honor in 1997.
Right.
But he's passed away. Passed away in 2010.
Do we want to talk about them in order that you talk about them in the book? Was there a particular reason that you have them in that order? Was it chronological, or should we just jump in anywhere we want?
That's a good question. I created an order. The order I created was sort of the drama. The stories kind of build upon each other.
All
so
right.
We can talk about them in that order. That's fine.
Okay. So tell us about Charles L. Thomas. He was in a tank destroyer battalion serving in Europe, correct?
Yes, he was. He was from Detroit, Michigan, attended college before he entered the service and enlisted and actually became an officer, trained in Colorado to become an officer and took over a company in the 614th Tank Destroyer Battalion, which was based at Camp Hood in Texas. He led his company and his platoon into battle across Europe.
What was the most difficult aspect of being an African-American officer in those days? I know that you've written about it and others have written it too, that they not generally get any sort of credit or any sort of respect from most of the white officers, right?
That's correct. Yes, they didn't receive the same respect from the white officers that other white officers did receive. And they were battling prejudice, racism, all through the war. They were fighting on 2 fronts.
I was amazed to read this. I thought this was really something. The 614th Tank Destroyer Battalion received 8 Silver Stars, 29 Bronze Stars, including one for their commander, Lieutenant Colonel Frank Pritchard, and 79 Purple Hearts. The particular battle for which he received his initial citation took place on December the 14th in 1944, correct?
Right, Charles Thomas. Yeah, they were fighting. His unit was attacking a town called Carnbach in France, and his role in his unit was to draw fire from the Germans so the other American units could encircle the town and come in on the flanks. And his unit went forward in the fog, and this town in France was located up on a hill. So they came up out of the fog on the hill and then drew an enormous amount of fire Thomas said after the war that he never expected to draw the fire he did because they had infantry in the woods anticipating an attack from the Americans. They had 88 guns. They had tanks in town, all trained on his unit, which consisted initially of two towed M5s, which were howitzers, that he started firing on the town. And he lost over half his men, suffered over 50% casualties, and his action was so outstanding that his unit received the Presidential Unit Citation, and it was the first black unit in World War II to receive that. It was an incredible action that his unit performed, and their delay of the Germans and keeping them, their attention diverted on them, allowed the Americans to encircle the town and take the town, which was filled with a veteran unit of Germans from the 26th Panzer Division, who were in North Africa. So they're hardened battle veterans, and they weren't going to give up easily. So his action was incredible.
Our second hero, who was not recognized with the Medal of Honor during World War II, was Vernon Baker. He was involved in the same campaign that my father-in-law was involved in Italy. Now, how did he end up in Italy?
Yeah, he was he's from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and he attended basic at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, and became part of the 378th Infantry, which was part of the 92nd Division. And his regiment, 370th Infantry Regiment, went over to Italy, as the spearhead of the 92nd. So they were actually pushing up the Italian peninsula, basically get the Germans out of Italy, because the Germans had established sort of a line in the sand called the Gothic Line in northern Italy that the Americans' allies were having trouble breaking through. And Vernon and his unit were tasked to take a castle stronghold, and other regiments in his unit, actually three other regiments, failed to take this position. And Vernon led his men up the hill towards the castle stronghold, which had 8-inch thick walls. I mean, it was, they were well protected in this stronghold. And he was able to get within 300 yards of the castle stronghold. But then, mortars rained down, but they held their ground and took very severe casualties. He led 26 men up the hill and lost 19. And he was able to hold the position and come back down, which kind of broke through the position because the Germans evacuated after his action, because he was tasked to lead another unit up to the same position the next day, and the Germans had evacuated. So it was an incredible action that he performed, finally breaking through the stronghold in the Gothic Line, which began the Germans' retreat out of northern Italy.
Now, there's a couple of things about this particular hero that were egregiously annoying to read. The good thing was that he was the most highly decorated black soldier in the Mediterranean theater when he was awarded the Distinguished Service Cross. However, his CO was Captain John Runyon, who got the Silver Star and basically abandoned Vernon Baker and his men, apparently had some sort of breakdown at the front and had to be evacuated, but yet took credit for everything that Vernon Baker did with his men.
Yeah, it was unbelievable in my research to discover that. Vernon had actually served as acting company commander after his company commander had been wounded and carried off the battlefield. So he was serving as company commander prior to this action, but then they received three new white officers before this engagement, and one of them was Captain Runyon, who had never served in combat. He didn't serve a second in combat, but he was tasked to lead these men up the hill. And when they started getting fire from the castle, he panicked and hid in a shed, which Vernon described. He was sitting there with his arms curled up around his knees and didn't know how to lead these men. And he decided that he was going to head back and get reinforcements. So that was the excuse he gave to Vernon, while Vernon, you know, was holding the men together. And what is annoying is he went down to regimental headquarters and told the regimental commander that Vernon and the rest of the guys had been wiped out, where Vernon was waiting for reinforcements that Captain Runyon had told him would be arriving. So they waited longer than they needed to, you know, enduring the fire. But Runyon had told the commander that, don't worry about sending reinforcements, they're all dead. And politically, I mean, Vernon was awarded the Distinguished Service Cross very soon after this action. He was elevated to first lieutenant. But through the political machinations, Runyon was able to also receive the Distinguished Service Cross, and I include the full citation in the book, which is incredible, because he takes credit for the actions that Vernon performed. It's incredible.
Then our next hero is Willie James Jr., who was a member of a unit that got put together, the 5th Platoon. Explain the significance of this 5th Platoon.
Sure. Well, late 1944, after the Battle of the Bulge, Eisenhower was seeing that there was such great attrition in the American rifle companies after that battle engagement in late December of 44. And they decided to open up rifle companies, frontline units, to black soldiers who had been serving in service companies behind the lines, rear echelon duty, you know, the Red Ball Express and other units. So in January of 45, he put out a letter inviting, quote unquote, inviting black soldiers for the privilege of serving on the front lines. And the Army was overwhelmed. They got close to 5,000 applications for combat training, and they only had places for about 2,500. So they took men in and started training them in France in combat training facilities. And the men who trained, the black soldiers, they decided the way they were going to do it was not substitute the black soldiers one for one for white soldiers who had been killed or missing in action, but form a completely separate 5th platoon that was led by white officers within these units, within the companies. So that's what a 5th platoon, they called it a 5th platoon, and it was black soldiers. And Willie James was a scout in one of the 5th platoons, and he was at the front leading his men into Germany, across, I believe it was across the German lines, and he discovered they were crossing over a river, a riverside town, and he was exploring forward as a scout in the fog, and he went and investigated the position, came back to his commander and said, you know, there are Germans there, but I know where they are and I can lead you forward. So his commander had him lead alongside himself, his commander, as they entered this town. And his commander was taken out by a sniper. And Willie James Jr. ran to his aid and also was struck down in the street. So it was a heroic action because he was leading from the front and tried to drag his commander, who was already dead, from the street, from harm. he received years later, of course, the Medal of Honor for that engagement.
And he was a PFC, a private first class.
Yes.
The next one, number four, I found the most interesting because he had the most circuitous route getting into combat, and that is Edward Allan Carter Jr., who was a teenager in China, in Shanghai, in 1932, and which means he's in China on the cusp of the Japanese invading, and they're already starting to make incursions into northeast China at this point, right?
Right, right. He was he had moved to Shanghai with his parents, who were missionaries. Mother was from India, Calcutta, and they lived in Calcutta for a short while, but then they moved to the international settlement in Shanghai during the early 30s, and they came under attack in that area from the Japanese, who wanted to invade China and Shanghai. And because it was doing so well, you know, prospering. And Eddie Carter was only 15, and his father was very domineering, and he was looking to get out from under his thumb. And he decided during the chaos of the invasion, when they were sheltering at a sanctuary, to go and join. He had already been attending the Shanghai Military Academy, but he decided to join the Chinese 19th Army. And he spoke Chinese from learning it in school, and they needed people on the front line, so they said, sure, come on in. So he started fighting at age 15 on the line.
And gets a promotion. He's doing so well.
Yes, he did so. Yeah, he was doing so well that they were going to promote him to lieutenant. But during that time, his parents were worried over him, and his father finally heard that he had joined the Army, and he came to his commanders, found his commander's office and headquarters, and told his commander, I should take my son back, he's only 15, and they were shocked.
now
he left the Army then.
Yes, and now this is not the last time he serves in a foreign army. He ends up fighting in the Spanish Civil War, right, with the International Brigade.
Yep,
and
the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, part of the International Brigade, mm-hmm. in the Spanish Civil War, which was amazing.
And he eventually does get into the United States Army as part of the 35th Quartermaster Truck Company at Fort Benning?
Yes, in 1942. After the Spanish Civil War was ended, and he came back to the States, Los Angeles, he had a difficult time finding work as the Depression was ending. There was essentially no work, so we decided to rejoin the Army in 1942 and became part of the Quartermaster Truck Company. And then they were shipped to Europe, reassigned, deployed. And during that time, he was serving in that unit, he was petitioning his superiors to serve in combat because they had so much experience, mm-hmm. In the past. And then when Eisenhower issued the letter, which I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. inviting black soldiers to rifle companies, Eddie jumped at that chance and signed up and became part of a frontline unit in the 12th Armored Division. He was part of a unit that was entering Germany in early 1945, February, March, and he was entering unexplored territory. It was a very dangerous mission. His division was actually called the Mystery Division because Patton had them remove their unit markers on all their equipment, on their uniforms, so that the Germans, if they encountered them, wouldn't know what unit they were from,
right?
To confuse them. What Sergeant Carter did was they were, imagine this, they're traveling into Germany, unexplored territory, motoring down the road, completely in the open, exposed, and they came under fire from an abandoned warehouse just off to the side of the road, 150 yards. A German 88 opened up on them and a machine gun, and Sergeant Carter volunteered to take out the German's position. And he had two other men join him, three other men, and they decided to cross an open field towards this position, all the time under German fire and artillery fire. And two of the men were killed, another one headed back, wounded. And Eddie was shot several times and sort of stranded in the middle of this field while the bullets, you know, went over his head towards the American, you know, convoy. So he decided to play dead and figure out what he was going to do, because he knew that the Germans would come out looking for him. So he stayed in that position for 2 hours, and he waited until the Germans came closer. And he knew German from learning it in Shanghai Military Academy. And he waited until they were close by, and he heard a voice, and he was carrying a Thompson submachine gun, his favorite weapon. And a patrol of six Germans came out, and then they called, you know, Amerikan, because they spotted him. And he had practiced his maneuvers. He shoved the butt of the rifle, the gun, onto the ground to lift himself up, because he barely could walk. And he fired on four of the six and killed them. And the two others immediately raised their arms and surrender. What he did was, he knew he was out in the open, totally exposed. He grabbed one man in front of him and grabbed him, slung his Thompson over his shoulder, grabbed the other man behind him as a shield, and walked backwards 150 yards towards the American convoy with these two prisoners. And both the Germans and the Americans watching him come back were just struck in awe by the scene. And he arrives back at the American position, and his commander says, "Okay, take these prisoners away." And he said, "No, we need to interrogate them. They have information on what's ahead of us, you know, what's down the line." And his commander said, "Well, no one speaks German." He says, "I do." So he proceeded to interrogate them in German, and they were forthcoming with information that's, you know, on machine gun nests and mortar positions that were down the road. So he preserved, you know, the convoy safely to proceed forward. And then he was sent to the hospital. He had, I believe it was 9 total wounds, bullet wounds, that they had to take care of. But an amazing story.
We're not going to have time to tell everybody's story, sadly. The George Watson, who dies rescuing drowning servicemen in the South Pacific when a USAT, the Jacob, rolls over. We have Reuben Rivers, who's killed in action with Patton's Panthers. Those are great stories. But I wanted to get to John Fox, because John was actually referenced Charles Thomas's story. John Fox, and his story is incredible.
First Lieutenant John Fox was from a suburb of Cincinnati, and he did serve in an infantry unit, commanded it. And he was part of an artillery company, a cannon company in Italy. He was assigned over Christmas 1944, volunteered actually, to serve as a forward observer in this town called Somma Colonia, which is in Tuscany, in Italy. And they were, it was the 366th, I believe, 366. And there were only 75 of them in this town. And the Germans had snuck up on the town with mountain rangers from Austria and Germany, you know, seasoned soldiers, and attacked this town while he was a forward observer in this town, overwhelmed this town, 3-1 odds against John Fox. And he had, the firing by the Germans began at 4:30 in the morning, and he had been directing artillery fire for hours, you know, as Dave wrote, the day after Christmas, 1944. And he could see from his observation post in a stone tower, looking down on the town, that his men were starting to get into hand-to-hand combat, and it was getting to the point where they were being overwhelmed. So he decided to radio back to his commander. They had been in touch all morning, to direct artillery fire on his own position in the tower. And at first they thought that they didn't hear him right, and he said, "No, I want you to fire on my position. There are more of them coming than there are of us." So his request had to be sent up the chain to General Truscott, who approved the request to fire on his position. So they decided, the way artillery works is they fire a salvo, and the observer has to adjust. So they fired the first salvo, and he said, "No, bring it in 25 yards. So we actually had to adjust the artillery fire to get closer to his position. So they adjusted the position. They fired again, and then took out his position and killed, and he was killed in the engagement. But it struck them in what he had done that his commander decided to have a moment of silence on the radio for John Fox. Hmm. And unfortunately, it was the battle was, you know, the men were wiped out anyway. But the Americans were able to retake that position just several days later.
It's an incredible story. And all of these are stories of men who put their own safety second. I'm so glad to learn that they have finally made it right. These are great stories, and people need to know about them. Particularly appreciative, Rob, for you taking time to talk to us today about your book, Immortal Valor, The Black Medal of Honor Winners of World War II from Osprey. Do you have a website or anything like that?
I do. It's robchild.net, and I have the weekly military history podcast that you mentioned. I'd love people to check that out. It's called Point of the Spear with Robert Child. We've got great historians and military authors on it every week. I'd love people to check that out as well.
Excellent. Thank you again. It's been a great honor to get a chance to talk to you, and I appreciate so much you making time to visit with us today on the bookshelf.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Once again, our guest today, Robert Child, the author of Immortal Valor, The Black Medal of Honor Winners of World War II, denied recognition for 50 years. It's from Osprey Publishing. And you can also check his website, robchild.net, and look for his military history podcast, Point of the Spear, available on all major platforms. I encourage you to check out my podcast as well on thebookshelf.podbean.com. And listen again next time right here on your favorite radio station to hear more fascinating stories. Thanks so much for making time to be with us and for listening. I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. God bless.